Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. I welcome you. I also want to give a special call out to the taxi drivers in New York City. A lot of them listen and share this information, even carry the program live so people in their cab can hear it. I appreciate that. Today, all about commentaries. And I want you to call in and share your comments and your points of view and your input. Commentaries today on Will the Peasants Go Medieval on Bankers from Washington Blog. I have my own thoughts and wrote a commentary on that myself. Two anniversaries that I believe we should take a moment to look at. One is one that will not be mentioned by any of the mainstream media, and that is Agent Orange. The toxic effects of Agent Orange persist 51 years after the Vietnam War. And commentary from Marjorie Cohen of Truthout and Jeannie Mirror. Also from Ciara Ulrich, Sanctions, Diplomacy's Weapons of Mass Murder from Countercurrents. I'm particularly concerned because over a number of years I've highlighted we have never once had a national debate, not one single debate, anywhere on the official left or the official right in the media about the 500,000 innocent Iraqi children who died because of Bill and Hillary Clinton's horrendous decision to bring sanctions against Saddam Hussein. Of course, we know that the sanctions did not impact him at all. We know he had multiple palaces. He would have full dinners served at all those palaces every day, whether he was there or not. His army, his chief of staff, his high Baathist party members, the top Sunni, all were never affected by the sanctions, but the poor were. This was an act of genocide. So a commentary today when we're trying to regime change in Iran or anywhere else by using sanctions. The other side of the story. Fukushima. New information that we will share with you today on Fukushima, and it is startling. I will tell you about what the truth is about all the food in Japan and the rivers and the lakes and all the water. You have not heard this before. Some global research, Jim Bartel, but I will share that with you. But we always start with really empowering information that can improve the quality of our lives. And we're going to begin with something I've suggested many times, that's resveratrol. Resveratrol, R-E-S, resvera, V-E-R-A, trol, T-R-O-L, has enormous potential for correcting damaged DNA, in effect, changing your gene. And now there's something else it does, and this was published in a major peer-reviewed journal, and it was done at the JSS College of Pharmacy in India. Here's what it says. It can control blood sugar. Quote, 3 months of consuming a daily supplement of resveratrol may help with blood sugar control and improve blood pressure in type 2 diabetes. Improvements in hemoglobin A1C, a marker of the long-term presence of excess glucose in the blood, were observed following a 3-month supplementation of 250 milligrams per day of resveratrol in combination with oral hypoglycemic agents. Quote, the results of the present study support our hypothesis that resveratrol supplementation improves glycemic control and the associated risk factors in patients with type 2 diabetes mellitus, end quote. In lay language, what this means is we've known for a long time that this chemical found in grapes and to a lesser degree in red wine and most in supplement form, let me put it, if you had a sliding scale, 250 milligram tablet, that would be your highest level. Then grape juice concentrate that you can buy in any health food store. That would be at about 70% of that. Then grape juice would be at about maybe 50% of that, but then a glass of red wine would be at about 10% of it. So if you understand the math, you would have to drink about 10 to 20 glasses of red wine to get the same amount as resveratrol if you were to consume it in a concentrated tablet form. And hence, I suggest using it in supplement form. And I know a lot of you are getting that amount because I know a lot of you are taking compounding fruit powders and you're getting that amount. So you're on the right side of health. We know that it does a lot of good, but we did not know until this study that it could help all the people who are pre-diabetic and diabetic and suffering from insulin resistance or suffering from metabolic syndrome. That's about 90 million Americans, 90 million. Think of the lives that could be saved with something that simple. So that's good news, and that's a life changer as far as people who could otherwise die of a stroke from high blood pressure. Grapefruit juice is one of those really good juices. It's easy to grow grapefruit. A grapefruit tree can last decades. And if you fertilize it regularly, you can have grapefruits that can last 12 months. In fact, this year I have several hundred grapefruit trees on my farm and different varieties. And it's just a myth that you have a season and they're gone. They start coming now in October. They're ripening up over the summer. The warm weather, the warm winters mean they're coming much quicker. But you can leave a grapefruit on the tree till it drops, which sometimes is 7, 8, 9, 10 months. And I only pick drop fruit. I go out each morning and I pick it up off the ground. If you leave it for more than a day, the bugs get in it. But if you don't, you know, it's great. And then if you really want to do a cleanse, then you wash it thoroughly and then you cut the skin and juice the whole thing. The pulp inside, which are rich in bioflavonoids, and the skin and the seed in particular. If you have parasites, if you have intestinal problems, the acids in the seed, the caprylic acid, is great for dislodging parasites and critters that you don't want and bad bacteria from your intestine. If you want something a little sweeter, then you just take out the flesh and you juice it or you eat it or blend it. Here's one more reason to have your grapefruit every day. Quote, from clinical cancer research done at the University of Chicago Medicine, grapefruit juice has anti-cancer properties that can help if you're taking chemotherapy drugs. It helps actually facilitate greater healing. So think of all the people who are taking chemotherapy and now take grapefruit juice and that helps them. Well, how about this? What if you took curcumin and grapefruit juice and tested that against the chemotherapy? I'll bet that the grapefruit juice and curcumin at 10,000 milligrams do a better job. Another good study on grapes. This one coming from the Journal of Nutrition. Research done in the Department of Nutritional Sciences, University of Connecticut. Here's what it says. Eating grapes may help protect your heart in men in particular with metabolic syndrome. And I'll quote this. Consuming grapes may help protect heart health in people with metabolic syndrome. Researchers observed a reduction in the key risk factors for heart disease in men with metabolic syndrome, reducing blood pressure, improving blood flow, and reducing inflammation. Natural compounds in grapes, known as polyphenols, are thought to be responsible for this, and this was a double-blind, placebo-controlled crossover study. So, I'm suggesting seeded grapes. It is the seed in the skin of the grape where you get your greatest nutritional benefit. And some people say, well, Gary, I don't have the digestion I once had, and those seeds won't break down. Well, what you do then is you simply throw the grapes into a blender. Throw in 1 tablespoon of raw coconut oil, 1 tablespoon of flaxseed oil, some vitamin C with quercetin, and blend that up with some, grapefruit juice and drink that down each morning. Wow. That'll help lubricate your joints, turn off inflammation in the brain, turn off inflammation in the spinal column, turn off inflammation in your gut, and then throw in some probiotics and L-glycine, 3,000 milligrams, and you're healing your intestine. Leaky gut syndrome, parasites, your itises, great way to start the day. If you're a pregnant woman and going through some depression, the University of Michigan has just completed a study published in Complementary Therapies and Clinical Practice. Let me quote it. Yoga provides benefit in reducing depression in pregnant women and boosts maternal bonding. Prenatal yoga may help women cope with depression. So, if you're pregnant, yoga, and that can help you. And if you start to get depressed and you're pregnant or post-pregnant, yoga can help. Also, Tai Chi, another wonderful exercise practiced. Well, let's put it this way. There are more people each day in China who are going to do Tai Chi than all the people living in America. You'll see them everywhere. You see them in parks. You'll see them on the street or on the sidewalks. You'll see them in meadows. And you'll see them doing these slow motion where their hands are moving slow and their feet are moving slow. It's a martial art, but it's a meditative martial art. Here's what the European Respiratory Journal says. Tai Chi improves chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. And that is important. So if you do Tai Chi and you have chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, you're going to get better. I remember interviewing Gail Brewer, and her husband at that time was Dr. Tom Brewer. And he was a holistic obstetrician, and she was a holistic nurse practitioner. I believe she was a nurse, but she was a natural birther. She helped people through midwifery. Now, here's the latest. Everything that they were doing was right. This is from Yale University. This is published in PLOS One, which is a major research publication. And this is from the Department of Comparative Medicine at Yale School of Medicine. Quote, natural birth, but not C-section, cesarean section, triggers brain-boosting proteins. I'll quote this. Vaginal birth triggers the expression of a protein in the brains of newborns that improves brain development and function in adulthood. These findings are substantial. Quote, the results reveal a potential critical role of vaginal birth. Now, you think in behavioral development. Yeah, but for a long time, a lot of women were increasingly are taking C-sections. This is one more reason why not your childbirth is better. Now, let me just, one more here. I keep telling you to take an onion a day. Now, some people can't take a whole onion, but take a small one. There's about seven different types of what we call sweet onions. And if you take the onion, you peel it, you dice it or slice it, you run it under water, you can make an onion sandwich, putting a big, thick piece of beefsteak, organic tomatoes, really juicy this time of year. You put down mustard, you put down a nice piece of onion, you put down your Himalayan sea salt, maybe a little cayenne, sliced avocado, some sprouts on top of that, and with a sprouted bread bun, which means there's no gluten in it. Ezekiel makes those. That's a great sandwich. That's one way of having your onion. I like to take an onion, I cut it in half, I rinse it, get rid of the volatile oils, so there's no burning, and then you cut it and you marinate it in pure lemon juice, so it's covered in lemon juice. Then you add a little sea salt on that, and then you put that into a salad, and it's delicious. Here's the takeaway message. An onion a day keeps a stroke away. It thins the blood. It kills bacteria in your throat. It'll kill viruses in your throat. It'll kill parasites in your intestine. It lowers your blood pressure. It is anti-cancerous. It can help prevent tumors. It's, in my opinion, the onion and garlic are two of the top 10 foods you should consume daily. Here's the latest research on the lowly onion. And this is from Dana Nurek, Natural News. I'll quote this. Onions are not only a savory cooking staple to use as an inexpensive seasoning and flavoring agent in your favorite recipe, they also happen to be literally packed with beneficial compounds. So packed, in fact, they are actually healthier ounce for ounce than most superfruits like pomegranates, goji berries, and blueberries. Onions contain high amounts of quercetin. And quercetin is a polyphenol compound in the flavonoid family of antioxidants. Yellow and red onions are the best sources of this nutrient, while white onions are lacking. The general rule of thumb is the more pungent an onion tastes and smells, the higher the overall antioxidant value. The quercetin compound is also found in red wine, apples, citrus fruits, olive oil, olives, blueberries, to name a few. The compound is linked to, and here's what's important, quote, lower rates of all types of cancer due to its anti-inflammatory properties. It is also an excellent remedy for arthritis and other diseases caused by inflammation. Quercetin is also thought to improve prostate health in men and therefore may be an effective weapon against prostate cancer. It has also displayed natural antihistamine properties, thereby reducing allergic reactions and general allergies. Studies are being done on the potential benefits quercetin may have to help preserve healthy cholesterol levels while suppressing unhealthy cholesterol. Sulfur compounds offer an array of health benefits not to be ignored. These odorous compounds are responsible for the pungent taste and smell of an onion, as well as the release of eye-irritating gases when the flesh is cut. They are also responsible for the potent antimicrobial and antibacterial properties of the onion. In fact, onions can be used as a preserving agent and making food last longer. Sulfur compounds have long been regarded as a cancer-fighting nutrient. Like quercetin, they possess anti-inflammatory properties, which is why the onion is such a great combination of nutrients. And sulfur can help prevent blood clotting and therefore act as a super natural blood thinner. This can prevent cardiovascular disease, high blood pressure, heart attack, stroke, and arterial sclerosis, which is hardening of the arteries. So, one more reason then why we should be having our onion a day. So that is important. I'm Gary Nall. That's the latest on health and healing. And we like to always start our shows with that. And now we're going to go to our environmental segment of our program, then our social relevant commentaries, then we're going to open it up for the remainder of the program to you. Now, on the environmental issue, as you know, almost everything that has been officially released by the Japanese government or the utility in Japan on the Fukushima disaster, which is still a disaster, even though it's out of the news cycle, there has been nothing but a misinformation campaign. We have flown in twice to appear at the Ethical Culture Center, at the premiere of Knocking on the Devil's Door, as well as at Indian Point, the people who know the truth, the activists on the ground in Japan and at Fukushima. We have been told that it is contaminating the entire island. All right? Now, there's two ways of looking at this problem. If the government of Japan were honest, and we know the truth because we've had all forms of scientific evaluation of the air over Japan, the water, food samples, our government is completely in the loop with this, then why not just tell the people? We have a very serious contamination that will pollute the entire island of Japan, which is a relatively small island, and it's highly concentrated in a population, and we should start to relocate these people. Japan does have outer islands that could be used, and they could negotiate a treaty with Russia to get back a larger island that was taken at the end of the Second World War by Russia. And they could negotiate with China, a little more problematic because of the historic clash of the cultures. Remember, it was Japan that engaged in the rape of Nanking when it was the capital of China, and then denied it for decades, erasing it from all their history books. So there's bad blood there still in the older generation, not the younger generation. But China, on the other hand, has been quietly using our T-bills, our treasury certificates, of which they had about $1.78 trillion, to build 17 phantom cities holding 65 million empty rooms, apartments, and houses. Beautiful cities. I've seen pictures of them all over, and no one lives there. That's enough to house 80% of the Japanese population if they could come to some agreement. But then you'd have an extraordinary superpower. Reality time, China's gross domestic product this year will be about 7.5%. The United States is at 1.5. We owe more debt than any other country in the world. We're 1,000% in debt to every dollar we make. We are bankrupt, and that will not change. We just have the military might and the control to prevent people from holding us in the same judgment that we would hold others if they were economically irresponsible. So there's going to be some change there. Now, what do you do then if you tell the truth? First, people would stop buying Japanese products because you can't wash out or sanitize radiation contamination. If something is radiated, it's radiated for life, whatever the life of that particular chemical is, whether it's cesium or plutonium. That means everything manufactured in Japan, nobody would buy. That would crash the third largest economy in the world overnight. That would have a ripple effect all over the world. And what would they do with their population? It would panic people. So they have to lie and quietly look for their options before the final shoe drops. Now, what's the final shoe? Of all the buildings that were damaged, the nuclear facilities, the one that was the worst to us is the one that's still standing, but precariously standing, and that's the one that has a massive amount of fuel rods above ground in storage. One earthquake at 6 point or higher, which is inevitable that's going to happen. We just don't know when. It might be this week or 2 years from now, will cause that building to collapse. That will then set into motion the greatest nuclear catastrophe in world history. The entire planet would suffer the effects, but they would simply be decimated. That is the background. Now, what are we doing as a worldwide effort to build a crypt around that, like a gigantic titanium and lead and steel sarcophagus? Nothing. What are we doing to take some of those spent fuel rods and to encase them one at a time? Nothing. So isn't that a little dangerous? Oh, it's extremely dangerous, and no one's talking about it. Here's what global research Jim Bartel has to say. Quote, Fukushima radioactive cesium contamination of Japan's food chain. Listen carefully what I'm saying. This is all documented. Quote, almost all edibles contain radioactive cesium. Rivers and lakes are contaminated. The Japanese people are beset by a food chain that has been thoroughly compromised by radioactive cesium. As a result, there is no longer any public confidence in the integrity of Japanese food inspection system. Almost all edibles tested in Japan contain radioactive cesium. And it has now been verified that shiitake mushrooms in Miyoshi City, Hiroshima Prefecture, have tested above the statutory limit for radiation cesium. Thus, radioactive cesium has now spread far beyond Fukushima Prefecture. Like the HIV-tainted blood scandal in the 1980s, Japan's Minister of Health, Labor, and Welfare has once again been blindsided due to a lack of a proactive plan. Radioactive cesium has been detected in the food chain numerous times. A partial listing includes tap water, milk, eggs, rice, plankton, fish, iguana, mountain trout, smelt, seals, cabbage, spinach, parsley, green onions, cucumbers, shiitake and naitake, and nemako mushrooms, broccoli, bamboo shoots, wasabi, plums, green tea, rice straw, hares, which is a fungus, wild boar, bear, beef, baby formula, mother's milk, and the Yomiuri Shimbun reported on January 27, 2012, that beef contaminated with radioactive cesium, at least 300 becquerels per kilogram from thousands of head of cattle had been sold and most had already been eaten. According to radioactive testing published in the Ministry of Health and Labor and Welfare, that mountain trout from Mabashi City and Gumna Prefecture had high contamination levels of both cesium-134 and cesium-137. Wild boar has exceeded the government's limit substantially in numerous places. There is now virtually continuous testing of edibles in many areas of Japan, and more than 2,300 samples have tested over the statutory limit for radioactive iodine or cesium. And then it goes through the amount of the half-life. Now, here's what you have to understand. The radioactive isotopes that they're testing, like a tritium hydrogen 3, that's got a half-life of 12 years, full life of 24 years. But let's say you get carbon-14. The half-life is 5,730 years. And strontium-89, that's about 50 days. Strontium-90, that's about 29 years. Iodine, that's... Iodine-131 can go up to several months. And then uranium-238 is 4 billion years. Plutonium-239 is 24,000 years. So we're talking about chemicals that are polluting everything in Japan, but it's also in their rivers, lakes, and bays. Here's from the report. It says, quote, in Fukushima Prefecture, Lake Akimoto and Lake Hibra and Lake Onagawa, and plus the Mana River, the Nagase River, the Ada River, Nida River, Sioux River, all these rivers have produced contaminated fish. And then the lakes, they mention all the different lakes that are the sources of food for the people, including sockeye salmon, brown trout, Masu salmon, are all contaminated. So the rivers, lakes, and bays are all contaminated. I have a list in front of me of all the different things that have been tested. The testing organization. So I have the official testing organization given to me by the whistleblower. I have the samples collected, the date they were collected, the results of this, and the test results. Now, this is phenomenal because no one in the American media has put this up. I'm holding it in front of me now. If you're watching this over our video streaming at GaryNall.com or ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, you'll see here, these are everything. Like, for example, the milk cap mushroom. It talks about who did the testing, Institute for Public Health and Environmental Science, the date, which was July 28th, the results obtained on August 1st of this year, and then the amount that was in there and the safe amount, and it shows that they're way, way over on all this. So virtually all the food in Japan is contaminated. All the fish, all the vegetables, everything. So you now know the truth, that it's completely contaminated, and this is going to mean that the people have to drink water and juices. They have to eat food. So now we're going to see the poisoning of the entire population of Japan. So I'm suggesting not buy anything from Japan. Now, two short commentaries, then we'll go to your calls. Before we go to our three short commentaries, let me just mention that this Saturday, I was asked by the Theater for the New City, would I be willing to show the film, my new important documentary, The War on Health, the FDA's Call of Tyranny, to the people living in Manhattan who could not get to the other showings. Just so you understand, when we did our official premiere in New York at the Ethical Culture Center, we were packed to the gills, 1,000 people, but there were about 4,000 people who wanted to get there and could not. We were just sold out. The same was true in Long Island, At Huntington, it was sold out. Upstate, it was sold out. In Woodstock, there were 150 people couldn't even get in their Woodstock Community Center 2 weeks ago Saturday. But this will be my last opportunity to be here, to be there for Q&A afterwards, answer the questions, and you have a chance to see it. Historically, it was always free, but they said that they were losing money by doing that. Could we charge a small amount? Could they charge a small amount? It doesn't go to me. I do it for free. $5. I said, sure. So if you want to join me this Saturday night at 7:30 for the final showing in the New York area of War on Health, the FDA's Call of Tyranny, followed by Q&A ads, a session, Theater for the New City, 1st Avenue and 9th Street, call 212-254-1109, 212-254-1109. I look forward to seeing you there. And again, I do this as a public service. I don't charge for the film. I don't charge to be there. I'm happy to share this with the world. And we now have had 14 million people go to Gary and All TV. How many have actually watched the film? I don't know, but it's going to be a high percentage. And if they did, that would make it the most watched documentary in world history. So the message is getting out. And I would just interview Joseph Marcola. He's going to be letting it go out to his people this week, millions of people, and Julian Whitaker next week, and Life Extension week after. So, and, oh, did we just find out that someone from the FDA, a deputy director, was arrested in prostitution sting scandal? Quote, a ranking FDA official is facing 4 counts of soliciting prostitution and a single count of disorderly conduct stemming from his arrest in Howard County. Well, I'll have to do a little more research on that to see what position he's held there and how close he is to the pharmaceutical industry. Well, that's interesting. Now to our commentaries. I'm opposed to sanctions because we never think of a sanction from the downside. We only think it's a legitimate, nonviolent way of coming to some terms with someone that we oppose. Do you remember when Madeleine Albright, who was both our UN representative and Secretary of State under the Clintons, was interviewed by Leslie Stahl in 60 Minutes? At that time, I was doing commentaries based upon how many children were dying of malnutrition or diseases from infected water because we had intentionally blown up all of their water purification plants, their power plants, and this is in violation of the Nuremberg Treaty. We were, in effect, acting like war criminals. And when Leslie Stahl asked her, well, is it really worth having 500,000 dead children? She said, yes, it's worth it. But there was no response to that. I would have asked her, what if your child was one of the 500,000 dead? Again, I thought it was extremely racist because these are, you know, these are not your, you know, blue-eyed, blonde-haired Caucasian children. And therefore, any other people of color who happen to suffer from our collateral damage, they're not given the same empathetic expression as they should be. It's just, to me, it's just lacking. Then again, that's the whole Clinton administration and the corporate Democrats that supported them. Here's this. This is from Soraya Ulrich from Countercurrents. I'll quote it short. In 1945, the United States of America dropped 2 atomic bombs on the cities of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, immediately killing 120,000 civilians. The final death toll of the horrendous bombings has been conservatively estimated at well over 200,000 men, women, and children. To this day, the world continues to be shocked and horrified by the visual images that captured the death and destruction caused by the bombs. The negative impact prompted America to devise a different weapon of mass destruction, sanctions. Unlike the shock and horror which accompanied the atomic bombs dropped on Japan, there were no images of the 500,000 Iraqi children whose lives were cut short by sanctions to jolt the world into reality. Not only has America taken pride in the mass killings of innocent children, but encouraged by silence and the surrender of its own weapons of choice, it has turned diplomacy's weapon of mass murder on another country, Iran. There has been little resistance to sanctions and the false belief that sanctions are a tool of diplomacy and preferable to war. Enforcement of this belief has been a major victory for American public diplomacy. The reality is the opposite. Sanctions kill indiscriminately. They are far deadlier than Fat Man and Little Boy, the two atomic bombs that took the lives of over 200,000 people. In the case of Iraq, the United Nations estimates 1,700,000 Iraqi civilians died as a result of sanctions. 1.5 million more victims than the horrific atomic bombs dropped on Japan. Diplomacy's finest hour? Even though Dennis Halliday, former Assistant Secretary General of the United Nations, and many other top officials resigned from their post in protest to the sanctions, saying, quote, "The policy of economic sanctions is totally bankrupt. We're in the process of destroying an entire society. It is as simple and as terrifying as that," end quote. But the murders continue. In 1999, 70 members of the Congress appealed to President Clinton to lift the sanctions in what they termed, quote, infanticide masquerading as policy, end quote. But America continued its lead with its diplomatic death dance. America, a morally bankrupt nation and the self-appointed global morality police, obeying the wishes of the pro-Israeli lobby groups, has for many years now pointed its deadly weapon of mass murder at Iran. Sanctions disguised as diplomacy. The misinformed and misguided global community indulges itself in the false belief that war has been avoided without thought to suffering and death. In fact, the notion that economic sanctions are always morally preferable to the use of the military force has been challenged by Albert Pierce, ethics and national security professor at National Defense University. His analysis shows that economic sanctions inflict great pain, suffering, and physical harm on the innocent civilians, so much so that small-scale military operations were sometimes preferable. But America prefers not to engage in battle. Not only would military confrontations bring global condemnation, but history has shown us that while America can win battles, it cannot win wars. Vietnam, Iraq, Afghanistan. It therefore resorts to sanctions, a coward's ruthless diplomacy tool, in order to disguise its role as the enemy of the purpose of depriving the target nation of self-defense against such horrendous aggression. Sanctions, the warfare by an enemy unidentified by a military uniform, is intended to eliminate resistance, to attack women and children, the weak and the old, to bring about regime change without fear of retaliation or censure by the peace-loving community. In this election year, as in the past, appeasement of the pro-Israeli lobbies take precedence to humanity, to the well-being of Americans, and to the security of the global community. A report developed by economists Dean DeRosa and Gary Huffbauer demonstrates that if the United States lifted sanctions on Iran, the world price of oil would fall by 10%, translating into an annual savings of about $75 billion for the United States alone. The current global recession would dwarf the figure cited. In conclusion, the United States has successfully blackmailed other nations to be its accomplice in suffering and mass murder, diplomacy's weapons of choice. To believe that Iran or Syria is the only target of these sanctions is as naive as believing that sanctions are diplomacy's put in place to avoid war. The global impact of the lethal weapons sanctions is simply cushioned in diplomacy. A brilliantly and ruthlessly executed diplomatic coup. And Soraya Ulrich is a public diplomacy scholar, a research scholar on foreign affairs. Now, Agent Orange. This is from Jean Mira and Marjorie Cohen from Truthout. This is only a page long. There are images from the U.S. war against Vietnam that have been indelibly imprinted on the minds of Americans who lived through it. One is the naked napalm burn girl running from her village with flesh hanging off her body. Another is a photo of the piles of bodies from the My Lai massacre, where U.S. troops executed 504 civilians in a small village. Then there is the photograph of the silent scream of a woman student leaning over the body of her dead friend at Kent State University, whose only crime was protesting the bombing of Cambodia in 1970. Finally, there is the memory of decorated members of Vietnam Veterans Against the War testifying at the Winter Soldier hearings, often in tears, to atrocities in which they had participated during the war. These pictures are heartbreaking. They expose the horrors of war. The U.S. war against Vietnam was televised, while images of the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq have been intentionally hidden from us. But what was not televised was the relentless 10 years from 1961 to 71 of spraying millions of gallons of toxic herbicides over the vast areas of Vietnam. These chemicals exposed almost 5 million people, mostly civilians, to deadly consequences. The toxic herbicides, most notably Agent Orange, contaminated everyone, and they contained dioxin, one of the most dangerous chemicals known to man. It has been recognized by the World Health Organization as a carcinogen and by the American Academy of Medicine as a teratogen, causing birth defects. From the beginning of the spraying 51 years ago, and even today, millions of Vietnamese have died from or been completely incapacitated by diseases which U.S. government recognizes are related to Agent Orange for purposes of granting compensation to Vietnam veterans in the United States. The Vietnamese, who were the intended victims of this spraying, experienced the most intense, horrific impact on human health and environmental devastation. Second and third generations of children born to parents exposed during the war and in areas heavily sprayed hotspots suffer unspeakable deformities that medical authorities attribute to dioxin in Agent Orange. The Vietnamese exposed to the chemical suffering have had cancer, liver damage, pulmonary and heart diseases, defects in reproductive capacity and skin and nervous disorders. Their children and grandchildren had severe physical deformities, mental and physical disabilities, diseases, and shortened lives. The forests and jungles in large parts of South Vietnam were devastated and denuded. Centuries-old habitat were destroyed. For the past 51 years, the Vietnamese people have been attempting to address this legacy of war by trying to get the United States and the chemical companies to accept responsibility for this ongoing nightmare. Any and all unsuccessful legal actions by Vietnamese victims of Agent Orange against chemical companies in U.S. federal court began in 2004 has nonetheless spawned a movement to hold the United States accountable for using such dangerous chemicals on civilian populations. August 10th marks 51 years since the beginning of the spraying of Agent Orange in Vietnam. In commemoration, the Vietnam Agent Orange Relief and Responsibility Campaign is urging an observation of 51 seconds of silence at noon to think about the horrors of war which have occurred. I would agree with that. Now, just as an afterthought, let us not forget that for the past 11 years, we have been putting depleted uranium in every inch of the Middle East. This is a desert area with high winds, and the Agent Orange can last thousands of years. The depleted uranium can last thousands of years. We have seen every form of birth defect. I produced a film 6 years ago called Friendly Fire. It dealt with how our government has lied to our troops, given them experimental vaccines, exposed them to chemical and biological warfare agents, chemicals and even their cleaning materials like DEET, and also depleted uranium. They've taken no responsibility whatsoever. As a result, people are both physically and psychologically scarred and suffering. 76,000 have died. Let me give you that number again. More Americans who served in Iraq and Afghanistan have died from non-battlefield-related illnesses that our government has known about and hidden, covered up. But all the people who live there, who have children, and I put pictures of, I think I put about 100 pictures. We had 5,000 given to us by a hospital, just one hospital in Fallujah, that they're asking parents don't have babies because there's a high probability your baby's going to be born with a cyclops eye in the middle of its head. Some children are born with no brains in their skulls. None of this had happened before our invasion and depleted uranium. Now, after 51 years, because we want to use Vietnam as a staging area against China, Hillary Clinton makes a token visit and says, oh, gee whiz, there's some problem here. Yeah, it's been there for 51 years. We're not going to do anything to clean it up, make some token effort now, because it's in our national security interest to do so. Why haven't we had a single major member of the American media talk about the depleted uranium that we put all over every country in the Middle East? And samples have been taken of the air to find depleted uranium as far away as England. I'm Gary Nall. Those are my thoughts. I'd like to hear yours. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Tomorrow, I'll deal with, will the peasants go medieval on bankers? I'm going to give you some of my own historical lessons about what did people do historically to bankers that they found were lying to them and cheating them and swindling them. You'll have an interesting historical view. I'll go clear back to 1376. I'll go back to the People's Revolution and show you how they treated bankers. But now we're going to take a break. Come back with your calls on any of the topics you feel you'd like to talk about. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome, all of you. I'm Gary Nall. I was just informed that we're almost filled up for the Saturday evening showing. The theater is the largest theater they have, and it only has about 8 seats left. So if you'd like to join me, 7:30 at 9th Street and 1st Avenue for the last showing of War on Health, the FDA's Call of Tyranny, call now, 212-254-1109, 212-254-1109. Let's say hello to Harvey from Berkeley. Hi, Harvey.
Hi, Gary, and thanks for caring for us all. It's very much appreciated. You're a very special guy.
Thank you.
Well, we have a Fukushima-like event waiting to happen here in California. If you go to a map and you look at the Central Valley, we have the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant located on the shore, just basically in front of the Central Valley. And the Central Valley last year produced $27 billion in foods, and it's one of the world's most productive agricultural zones. Well, you know, we're always being told about the big one here in California, a mega thrust earthquake, 9.9 or better on the Richter scale, and it's going to shake everything up. And this plant is really old, and if this plant goes down, and we get a radioactive cloud going up, the sea breezes will blow it inland, and there goes the food from the Central Valley be radiated, plus the water for millions and millions of Californians flows from the Sierras through the Central Valley into Los Angeles and San Francisco. That water will become irradiated as well. And because there's a ground table, water table there, if the nuclear core melts down, there'll be an endless flow of steam, radioactive steam going up, blowing back into the Central Valley. It'll basically kill America. It'll kill because with the corn crop being reduced to 88% this year. And if the Central Valley goes down, that'll be the end of America. Plus, there won't be any drinking water. And they're fracking here, and we know that fracking causes earthquakes. So the whole thing is potential for another Fukushima-like event. And I say close the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant now while we have a chance.
I absolutely agree with your input, Harvey. Here's what I'd like for you to do. Call Nancy, Dr. Nancy, in my office at 646-926-5422. Have her send you a copy as a gift from me today of Knocking on the Devil's Door, 2, 3, 4, 5 copies. Take these around to your local cable stations. Get them on the air. Get some students together at Berkeley and show them. Get a call to action going. Go to our website and look at all the articles we have. We have 20 experts that would be willing to testify before any commission in any public gathering in California. Some actually live in California. And that way we can put greater pressure upon the legislature and the governor, who, by the way, your governor is becoming more like Arnold Schwarzenegger than the Jerry Brown of old. I got to tell you, I'm very disappointed in him. And I'll deal with his great water sellout on an upcoming show, but not now. We don't have time. But let's see if we can't get some demonstrations going, as we did in front of Indian Point, where we had so many people show up at Indian Point recently that there was no room. I mean, there's no room for people to stand, but it got the message out. We need to do the same thing in front of Diablo, because if Diablo should go down, based upon the currents, both the water currents and the air currents, it will ultimately, within 4 days, it would contaminate Los Angeles. And that, unfortunately, you can't decontaminate it once it starts, and they'd have no way of getting in there and really fixing it before a lot of damage would be done. So you're on to something very important. We have the tools, we have the articles, the documentaries, the experts. We have the truth on our side. We just need people on the ground at the grassroots level, Harvey, like yourself and others who are committed, concerned. So let's get the word out, all right? Okay, Harvey, all the best to you. Let's say hello to Chris from Queens. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Gary. I want to make a quick point about the drones and the bankers. Just because we tend to forget in this country so quickly, I remember Madeleine Albright, I believe her exact statement was, on balance, it's worth it, when she was questioned about the 500,000 children.
Yes.
You know, a few years ago, back in the early 2000s, I was watching something on TV, and they were showing the Israelis, this young girl with a ponytail in a little office, and they were using drones against Palestinian militants, was the report, right? And I remember when she got one, it was just like having a video game. I remember she hit it. You didn't see a body. You just saw like a little explosion on a screen. And I remember at the time, and I shamedly say this because I was still so naive, I thought to myself, oh, my God, she just hit a person. And her response to it was, oh, I got one. This was the response. This is what we're using now. This is what America does now. And I just want to say this, whoever is listening, that we as Americans here in this country need to start taking responsibility for our own emotional responses, because America has been totally unaccounted for, hasn't been accountable for anything that they've done. Regarding the depleted uranium, when they were bombing Serbia for 78 days, which is when Madeleine Albright was going there in her hawkish glory, okay, there was a lot, I remember this because there was a lot of concern at that time regarding a lot of the depleted uranium that had been dumped there in that region, which ended up in the Aegean Sea, okay? I just wanted to throw that in there. And one more statement, if you would allow me. As far as the drones, you mentioned the bankers and the speculation, which is an even larger war crime. These bankers are like drones. The harm that they've caused to countries, you know, and I'm not talking about all bankers. I mean, these guys who bet, that has nothing to do with banking. They just bet against the luck of certain countries. Who's going to live and who's going to die? They've caused so many problems to other countries and to people's everyday lives that you could never make up for it. This is even worse than being bombed and dying right away. This is all I wanted to say, because America needs to take responsibility. It's really gotten too far.
Chris, thank you for your input. I appreciate it. We only have a minute to go for many of the land-based stations, but we will continue taking your calls at 888-874-4888. And you can listen by going to the telephone at 832-280-0066, 832-280-0066. And we did write and call them saying, expand your bandwidth. Evidently, something like 50,000 people trying at one time, that's a lot of people, overwhelm the system. Or you can listen online at progressiveradionetwork.com. So we'll take another call, and we'll say goodbye to the regular stations. Let's say hello to, who do we have from Paul from Staten Island? Hi, Paul. You're on the air.
Yeah, Gary, related to your two commentaries, why do we take actions for good or for ill around the world and have no in-depth, unbiased examination that later on of the good and bad effects?
We can't do that. Paul, if we were ever honest at the outcome of our actions, we would not take those actions. But it's not just as a nation. It's we as a family. we as individuals. At the end of the day, there are no corporations doing bad things. There are bad people in corporations using the corporation as a firewall for being held accountable. If we reversed the idea of the charter as it now exists as a legal protection and made each person who commits a crime personally responsible, we would have very little crime. We certainly would not have the level of corporate crime that we have. So I believe that we should have a completely new agenda of laws, just like I believe we should take all money out of all campaigns. No one should be able to pay any money out of their own pocket or anyone else's pocket to get elected to any position, whether it's to a city council or to President of the United States, and base it upon the merits of what the person's platforms are. Have a lottery, let people be selected at random to come forward to debate, to give their points of view, and then we decide who is best, give them one term for 2 years, and that way we would bring some semblance of the values of a republic, but the mechanism of democracy back into our position. And then we could say no more laws, revoke all charters, and then allow people who want to do something, tell them in advance, let everyone know if you break a crime, you personally, the board of director, the managing, the lawyers, will be held personally accountable. Then you wouldn't see those crimes, not only here, but anywhere else in the world. I appreciate your call. Thank you, Paul. Let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hi, Gary. I'm getting an awful lot of emails from people that watch that 60 Minutes program on Sunday. Excuse me. A Karen from New Jersey said she watched you 15 years ago. I'm going to repeat that, 15 years ago on PBS. And I remembered that you spoke about the dangers of the American diet and put a big focus on sugar, followed by a definitive article on it. She took that article and shared it with her sugar-addicted kids. One of them, her son, had ADHD, and in reality, she said he probably was just having a bunch of sugar highs. So since she shared the information with her children at that time, and they're all grown up now, none of them are addicted to sugar anymore. And her question is, why didn't 60 Minutes recognize you for being the pioneer of this information or give you any credit for being the leader of this information?
There is a culture within all corporations, and it's an elitist mindset culture that they have to take credit for everything they do. There's enormous amount of plagiarizing. There's enormous amount of theft of ideas in corporate entities, including in broadcasting. One of the people listening to this program, her name is Susan Crowell. She's a professor. She is an outstanding artist and a very respected one. But her brother, and Susan's a friend of mine, her brother worked at George Crowell as a top producer at 60 Minutes for many, many years. He also was the author of Charlie Wilson's War, which was made into a movie. And I remember back in the 70s when he called me and was asking about an article I'd written on Lawrence Burton, which became a major story nationwide. It was a cover story, meaning on the cover of a magazine, the suppression of alternative cancer therapies. And I was called in. I met with Don Hewitt, and I met with a producer. So about four people met with me, and I was told to bring my research. I brought two giant boxes with tapes and logs and everything. And they kept it there for a while and called me back and said they loved it and they were going to do a show on it. And they did. And they filmed Burton and all the people that I had interviewed because they had their phone numbers and what they had said. And it came out. And it was enormously important because when 60 Minutes shows that the government was doing something wrong by planning to blackmail or blackball someone, it opened the doors to them. It got everyone off their back. Similarly, 2020 did a piece. Judy Moses contacted me, came, and took all my information. I worked with them for several months, and they did a piece that won two Emmys, one for 2020 and one for Geraldo, on Stanislaw Brzezinski. I'd done a cover story on him. I'd done over years worth of research. In neither case did I receive credit. I never will forget the phone conversation, which I have on tape, by the way. And I challenged Judy Moses or anyone at 2020 to say that anything I'm saying is wrong. They stole my material. And she called and says, "Oh, Gary, bad news. The lawyers here don't believe we should even mention you because it'll make it look like Geraldo didn't do his homework. I said, well, Geraldo didn't do anything. It's all my work. He's just taking credit for it. And she said, I'm sorry, but that's the way we work. And it was interesting because later when I had a separate meeting with Crow years later, and he wanted to know what I was doing, I said, at the end of the day, I have to do things for the common good. I can't do them because I want to get credit. Because then that's just selfish. So if I get credit or don't get credit, that's fine. But in corporate America, he was very clear. He said, you're not going to get credit. He said this. This is what he said to me. He said, we use people's ideas all the time and don't give them credit. All the time and don't give them credit. That's what he told me at lunch. I will never forget that conversation. And he said, you just got to accept it. If you're going to do anything with these major corporations, just be aware that they never do anything that gives anyone credit more than it would to themselves. That's why, at the end of the day, I accept that they did a story, did a good story, that helped the cause. And that's what's important. If you get credit or don't get credit, you just have to suck it up and say, do it for the common good. And that's what I do. And that's why tomorrow, if 2020 or 60 Minutes wanted a story that I'd created, I'd researched, I'd uncovered, they haven't, I'd still do the same thing today. Because it's getting the information out and helping people that should be our highest priority. Okay? We're out of time. Got to run. Thanks a lot, Luann. I'm Gary Noll. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day. Chance to get you.